There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the fangirl zone.
Welcome to the Marvelous Post-Blip Podcast, podcast on all things Marvel on the Fangirl Zone. I'm Hulk Steve.
I'm Sean Fangirl S, and today we're talking about episode 2 of the miniseries Secret Invasion, titled Promises, written by Kyle Bradstreet, Brian Tucker, and Brant Engelstein, and directed by Ali Salim.
Well, what did you think of this episode?
I thought this was interesting. This had a real serious note.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, this had just a whole different feel to me. This felt like how more of the movies kind of start. So I was enjoying it, and I'm really wondering where they're going.
Right.
Still have a lot of questions. I mean, that's going to just be my theme for the whole series, I'm sure.
Yeah, more than likely, because who knows what's going to happen with this? I mean, is Fury even Fury?
Oh my gosh, I was thinking that. And we had kind of an in-depth question about that. Like, we were going back and forth here in the house. It's like, is that him? Does he know about that ending? It's like,
right, yes.
Is he aware? I mean, there was a lot. And because his eye still looks different. And I'm like, would it have changed that much in these last few years? So just questions.
Yes, a lot of them. Yeah, it was an interesting episode to say the least. Man, talk about an information download. We got a bunch of information download there. So yeah, it may take a few episodes to process through all that to see where we're actually going now. But yeah, I enjoyed the episode.
I will tell you.
Well, I think to my seat.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this like pretty much ad nauseum, like with all of our shows. But Marvel has a great way of telling the story and for the long haul. It's not like a quick thing. So some of the stuff that they dropped in movies or TV shows like forever ago get like wrapped up after 8 years. We don't even know. It's like, wait, what? That from way back then?
Right.
So I wonder how much will be wrapped up now and how much will go forward with some of the movies that we're getting.
Right.
And some of the shows. So our questions may not be answered. So be prepared to not have questions answered. We only have 4 episodes after this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, things, you're going to be like, wait, where's my notebook? Just keep writing it down. That's what I suggest.
Yep. Because even though this says it's a mini series, I'm thinking it might go more than this 6 episodes.
Yeah, I definitely think we're going to have some of this carry over into the Marvels.
Yep. I kind of have a feeling, yeah, that we are going to see Carol Danvers and company before this is all over with.
So this should be interesting though.
Right. Yeah. Oh, this may lead into Young Adventures is what it may end up doing.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yep.
And unfortunately, everything going on with the strikes, and I don't know when we're gonna get anything, and this hurts my heart.
Yes,
I was
absolutely.
All excited thinking we're gonna get some information soon and everything's on pause, but that's okay. Because they all deserve to get paid.
Yes, they do.
So, anyway, let's jump into the huge recap, shall we? All right, everyone, hold on to your hats if you're ready for this recap. Fury grapples with past and present. I know that was a lot. We'll give you a moment to let it sink in.
Yes.
And then we can jump into the episode.
There's a reason episode 2 opens in the past. In 1995, Nick Fury meets the Skrulls. In 1997, he promises them a home. The conditions were that while he found them one, they would work to save Earth as a network of shape-shifting spies. They kept their end of the bargain. He didn't. This is how Fury first met young Gravik, when he sees him again in the immediate aftermath of the Moscow bombing that capped off the premiere episode. The context is suddenly different. Fury knows that post-blip he hid, and in doing so, he broke a promise to the Skrulls, suddenly left to fend for themselves in a world that was hostile to them. The debt has come due, and Maria Hill's life was just a down payment.
Ouch.
Yes.
On a train from Moscow to Warsaw, Talos expresses the bulk of his sentiment to Fury. The Skrulls were refugees fleeing Kree genocide. Yes, he kept from Fury that the entire number, around 1 million, were summoned to the relative safety of Earth, but where else could they go? Everywhere they went, they were met with hostility and anger. Well, yeah, I can see that on one hand, but on the other hand, it's like, were you just going into planets to almost take over?
Right.
Fury's excuse, the humans can't even coexist with each other. There simply isn't enough tolerance among humankind to accept an alien species, is understandable, but doesn't cut it. I was questioning that because there's large areas we know in like every country that don't have a population.
Right.
And if the Skrulls are able to adapt, why couldn't they kind of cut up something like that? And on top of it, don't we have New Asgard happening? Granted, it's a town.
Right.
Still.
Yes.
So I was like, And then if you go back to the show that wasn't exactly part of canon within humans, because they kind of like, yeah, let's not talk about that. But yeah. It's kind of the same thing. They were moving a whole population here, too. Granted, it wasn't 1 million. So I don't know. Maybe if they brought the Inhumans could help the Skrulls do something with, like, say, Mars.
Right.
They can have a whole planet. But anyway, moving on. Fury lashes out at Talos and sends him packing from the train, which was kind of a dick move, in my opinion.
Yep.
But the enormity of his revelation and Fury's personal responsibility for them stays behind in the cabin. Fury's guilt is only exacerbated at Maria's funeral, where her mother reminds him that her death is on his head. Ouch. I thought she was going to slap him, though.
Yes, I thought so, too.
That he has a responsibility to ensure that her death was not for nothing. The question now is whether, given his age and his abundance of lingering trauma, if he'll be able to do it at all.
Right. And it's not looking good.
No. Although, can I say the actor that we had for Maria's mom, I don't know if it was just, it could have been some CGI, whatever, that they did have, like, they favored each other.
Yes.
I was like, is she really related? Like, I was wondering. I don't think so, but she favored her.
Yes, she did. So back at New Skrullos, Gravik is more popular than ever among his rebel followers. Gaia, though, remains suspicious. It isn't totally clear where her allegiances really are. Yeah, that's an understatement.
She was side-eyeing everything.
Yes, she was. When she follows Pagan to a secret lab where a husband and wife scientist duo are feeding DNA samples into a machine, she overhears that Gravik is quietly and thus far unsuccessfully looking for something called the Harvest. Gaia looks up the wife, Dr. Rosa Dalton, on a compound computer and finds a list of DNA samples the Skrulls have collected, including Groot, Cull Obsidian of the Black Order, and Iron Man's extremist technology. Boy, they got people inside of everything.
No kidding. I was like, how did they get all of that stuff?
Right. Now, Gravik, who mentions offhandedly that he once suspected her of being Talos' spy when she first joined, but doesn't seem to realize she's spying on him in that very moment, invites her to join him in freeing the captured Brogon from Russia interrogation.
I don't know. Do you think that he doesn't suspect her now? Because I'm starting to think he does.
I think he does, too. With her. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like everything he's doing is to mess with her.
Right, because of the simple fact that she asked him if he expected that Fury would show up there. And he said, yeah, I was kind of hoping so.
Yeah, it just feels like he's way ahead.
Yes.
Especially when we've seen him as Fury What if he was posing as her dad or something at some point?
Right. Yeah.
We don't know anything.
Nope. And that could be what takes out Gaia as her own dad.
Oh, that'll be messed up.
Yes, it would.
Meanwhile, the EU and the UK convene an emergency summit to essentially lay blame for the Moscow attack at the feet of the US. Representative by Brody. James Rhodes isn't interested in baseless allegations, and neither is President Ritson. But Furian Hill's presence at the scene is a bad look, geopolitically speaking. So when Fury calls Rhodey to invite him for a drink, War Machine fires him. I thought that was funny, too, when he's like, and I can't remember which country it was that kept scoffing every time he spoke. It's like, if that one doesn't stop, I'm going to put on the suit and carpet bomber. I am not a big fan of the way this was developing.
No. To see Rhodey turn on Fury like that was jaw-dropping, to say the least.
But I kind of feel like there's something. So let me go over the next couple things, and then I will tell you my tinfoil hat theory.
Okay.
So we all get that it has to happen. So Fury has a narrative excuse to go rogue. But it never sits right when longstanding heroes act with inexplicable hostility to allies for the sake of the plot. Especially when Fury's counterarguments against going public with the Skrull threat, their shape-shifting abilities make the usual deference, i.e. the Avengers, far too risky, makes total sense. And if you read the comic books, you know what they did.
Yes.
I will sum it up in very bad things.
Yes.
And not the movie, very bad things. I suppose there's always a chance that Rhodey's a Skrull. So my tinfoil hat theory is Rhodey knows somehow who some of the Skrulls are who infiltrated, and he was doing this, like I said, to give Fury the out so he can do what he needs to do.
Okay.
Because Rhodey knows whatever meeting he was involved in, like that he casually mentioned that. I kind of feel that Fury should already know, like whatever was part of that top secret meeting. So I am feeling that, I mean, there was questions if Rhodey's a Skrull or not, but I'm thinking he is not. Rhodey is Rhodey. But people around him are Skrulls, and he's not sure which side they're on.
Right.
So he's trying not to let things slip.
Right.
And then, yes, and again, it sucks the way this happens, but I almost wish there was like a code word that happened between Rhodey and Fury, because when we see Fury in the next up go outside, sit on the bench and look defeated.
Right.
I was thinking he was going to go outside and be like, okay, I can begin. Something along those lines.
Right.
So that's my tinfoil hat that Rhodey knows, and he's trying to help, and he's going to have to do everything backdoor. So it's going to go through people that Fury won't expect at all.
Right. Oh, anyway, Sonya Fallsworth makes her presence felt and promises when she takes over Brogan's interrogation, cutting his finger off with a pair of scissors to confirm he's a Skrull, before moving on to her real strategy of injecting him with a chemical that makes his blood literally boil.
Was that not a frightening scene? And I don't mean
absolutely.
What was happening. She was just so calm and sweet during it. That's what made it more frightening.
Yes, absolutely. That was Channel Zero level creepy.
Yes.
This, I think, is what lent some validity to the Andor comparisons. Torture of any kind is never a fun watch, but Sonya's obvious nonchalant about it, coupled with the extremely macabre method, made a lot of people more uncomfortable than Marvel stuff usually does.
That's why I was saying this felt very dark.
Yeah. Anyway, Brogan spills about the Daltons and hints that their machine is intended to make the Skrulls stronger, suggesting we're doing a Super Skrulls arc. Well, we're going to have some kind of heroes.
I mean, they're already really strong, so this is going to be very awkward.
Yes. Sonya escapes through the hatch just as Gravik and Pagan storm the place, killing all the Russians and taking Brogan away. Gaia, who stays in the car with Beto during the raid, makes a clandestine call, and when the Skrulls return to their safe house, they discover the police have been tipped off about it. I'm thinking probably. Either way, Gravik has them drive into the woods and Hagen executes Brogan. And you can tell how much that affected Gaia.
Oh my gosh. That's why I said earlier that I think Gravik is just screwing with her.
Yeah.
And especially when the guy said brother or bro, I'm like, okay, is that just like friendly thing or are they related?
Right.
That was messed up. But I don't know if she's the one who tipped off for the safe house or if she was tipping off something else.
Right.
That's where I was like scratching my head.
Yeah.
So let's all scratch our heads some more. I'm going to scratch my brain at this point.
Right.
Because as promises come to an end, Fury picks up a vehicle and heads out into the countryside. There he enters a house where a Skrull cooking in the kitchen presents as human when he walks in. And we subsequently learn this is Priscilla Fury, Nick's wife. He puts on his wedding ring because she's like, did you forget something? I'm like,
yes.
Did he not take off his shoes? What's happening? But then they passionately kiss. It's like, wait. So yeah. Fury's married to a Skrull?
Yeah.
That's unexpected, and it raises all kinds of questions about what her allegiances might be in the as the season progresses.
Yes.
And does he know she's a Skrull?
Right.
Was this always a thing? Is he possibly a Skrull then? It's crazy the questions that moment just had tumbling out of my brain all of a sudden.
Oh, absolutely. It opened Pandora's box.
Yes. So for now, we'll check out more provocative episode than a premiere, which suggests that if Secret Invasion might not actually be Marvel's Andor, it might at least be something more daring than we thought and really putting out all sorts of puzzle pieces that we're going to lose our mind trying to figure out where they go.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We got some Easter eggs.
Yes, we do.
I love Easter eggs. Just as Secret Invasion episode 1's ending recontextualizes Nick Fury's presence, the opening scene aims to recontextualize his past. This is done through directly showing scenes from Captain Marvel. Episode 2 opens with the title card reading 1995 before a slew of scenes are shown from Captain Marvel, which serve as a recap of Fury's first encounter with the Skrulls from that movie. Some of it, too, I think was added or, you know, what may have been cut from the movie because I don't remember all of those scenes.
Right.
From his first meeting with Talos to Carol Danvers flying away with the Skrulls to find them a home, episode 2's most direct MCU Easter egg comes through showing scenes from the Skrulls' first appearance. Just as episode 1 changed the Marvel logo at the beginning, episode 2 follows suit. The shorter, more concise logo is used once again directly after the scene from Captain Marvel are shown, so not to slow down the pacing of episode 2's opening. I will tell you a lot of times I skip through, but right. I'm like, no, I have to pay attention because I feel like they're going to add little things in.
Yes.
This is done to reflect the darker tone of the show, therefore foregoing the more upbeat comic book elements of Marvel Studios' original logo and quickly moving into the new scene shot for the Secret Invasion set in 1997. During the opening scenes in 97, Sam Jackson once again has been de-aged in the MCU. It's so weird when they do that, though.
Yes.
This references his appearance from Captain Marvel with Fury looking almost identical to how he did at the end of that movie, a much younger version with an eye patch for his fresh scar. The scene showcases Fury's first meeting with Gravik with both much younger than they are from episode 1. One of the biggest mysteries after episode 1 is why the Skrulls are invading Earth after Captain Marvel promised to find them a new home, while the reveal of the Skrulls being persecuted no matter where they are wasn't exactly an Easter egg. The scene is a reference to both Captain Marvel and Episode 1. The scene adds context to Carol's ending in Captain Marvel and the conversations between Fury and Talos in Secret Invasion premiere, making it an Easter egg to both prior MCU products and possibly what's to come.
Yes.
During Episode 2, it is revealed that there are around 1 million Skrulls on Earth. This is an Easter egg to the Marvel Comics storyline of the same name, which was much bigger in scope than the series was at first glance. Before episode 2, many thought that the show would be a smaller scale invasion than the comics, though this reveal references the comics by revealing just how many Skrulls could be hidden on Earth that could align with Gravik. When showcasing,
that's a scary thought.
So many. I was like, holy crap. When showcasing the aftermath of the Moscow bombing from episode 1, the newsreel of the global response to attack is shown. From the response of an American news anchor to the statements from the NATO Secretary General and the UK Prime Minister, various reactions to the bombings are showcased. This is an Easter egg to the Hidden Scroll Council on Earth before it's revealed, with the episode later unveiling the people shown in the newsreel and that they're all actually Skrulls working with Gravik. What the heck?
Yes.
This also references the Secret Invasion comics, which include a lot of Skrulls in position of power on Earth, obviously.
Yes. As Gravik is talking to the Skrull Council in Episode 2, one of them worries that the Avengers will come back to stop the Skrull invasion of Earth. This is a reference to the fact that the Avengers have been missing or retired since Endgame, prompting Gravik to state, "You don't think I thought about that?" This hints to that Gravik has a plan in place should any of the Avengers come back to stop the Skrull plan.
This is where I was confused, because where does this fall in the timeline exactly? Because right. We had Falcon and Winter Soldier, and it's like, so where is this falling? Is this before them, or because they haven't come out fully to bring everybody kind of back together? It's like, what's going on?
Right. Time will tell.
Hopefully.
Yes. During a crisis meeting in London, Rhodes is shown defending the stance of the U.S., insisting that Fury and Hill were not acting on behalf of the United States government. After one of the representatives at the meeting, namely Slovakia's, continuously roll their eyes at Rhodes' defense, he states that he will don the war machine armor and carpet bomb them if they do it again.
Man, she was annoying me.
Yes, she was. So far in Secret Invasion, Rhodes has only appeared outside the suit, with this naturally referencing his famous MCU alter ego. One of Episode 2's best scenes involves the conversation between Fury and Rhodes, with the former trying to convince the latter that the Skrull's threat is real. When mentioning that a borderless organization is threatening the planet, Rhodes immediately jumps to the conclusion of Hydra. This is an Easter egg to multiple MCU films, from Captain America trilogy to Avengers Age of Ultron. Hydra were the primary organization behind a lot of the MCU's world-changing events, meaning it makes sense for Rhodes to question their potential resurgence. The scene between Fury and Rhodes also reveals that the latter has known that some Skrulls were on Earth for a long time. While this reveal is not an Easter egg itself, the fact that it recontextualizes the appearance of Rhodes in this series and the former MCU project is. Now that it has been revealed that Rhodes has known about the Skrulls in the former MCU appearances, it brings to light those other movies and just how long Rhodes has been aware of the Skrull appearance on Earth.
Yeah, he said, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, are we supposed to be in 2023? I'm like trying to do the math, like right, when anything happened.
Just as a Skrull posing as NATO Secretary General questioned the Avengers' inclusion earlier, Episode 2 has Rhodey ask why Fury does not call other heroes to help. Fury explains that if the Avengers are involved, the Skrulls could pose as them and turn the heroes into terrorists. This is a reference to the Secret Invasion comic book run, in which many of the Earth's mightiest heroes are impersonated by the Skrulls, who commit villainous acts against Earth under the guise of Avengers and other superhero team members. Another reference to the wider MCU is found in Episode 2 conversation between Rhodes and Fury, as Fury is imploring Rhodes to help him due to their shared struggle to rise through the ranks of power as black men in America. He references the mediocre Alexander Pierces who run this world. This is an Easter egg to Captain America the Winter Soldier and how Alexander Pierce essentially controlled the world through acting as the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. while secretly working for Hydra.
I was hoping it was going to be something really like a deep cut. Where
right.
They can,
yeah.
You know, again, show who's who. But we have more Easter eggs.
Yep.
One of the biggest mysteries included in Episode 2 is what Gravik has planned for Rosa Dalton. A scientist, he is tasked with obtaining DNA samples across the globe in search of something called the Harvest. As Gaia looks into these samples, she sees one is from Groot. What?
Yeah. How?
Groot's DNA was gained by the Skrulls from his time on Earth in either Avengers Infinity War or Endgame, with the file referencing his home planet as Planet X and his Flora Colossus species. I still don't understand. It's like, how did you figure out where his DNA? Did you get a leaf off him? What is going on?
Right.
Similarly, the computer in episode 2 shows that the Skrulls have a DNA sample from a frost beast. This is a creature from Thor Dark World that has transported to Earth during the film's final act and the convergence of the Nine Realms. Okay, so was this that thing that was like running around chasing birds at the end?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because I kept thinking the frost beast was supposed to be something else entirely.
Right.
And I'm like, I was thinking it was the thing from Thor 1, but that wasn't exactly a beast that was like mechanical, right?
Right, I think so.
Okay. I forgot about that thing that was like chasing the birds.
Yeah.
The Skrulls somehow obtained DNA from the beast after it fell to Earth, with the file mentioning Jotunheim as the home of the frost beast, another reference to the Thor franchise. Now, that thing was just kind of running around, so I guess if you're brave enough to approach it, you right. do you. An additional sample shown to be possessed by the Skrulls in episode 2 is that of Cull Obsidian. Cull Obsidian was one of Thanos' children in Infinity War, whose arm was cut off by Wong in the first act of the film. It is revealed in episode 2 that the Skrulls obtained the arm from Cull Obsidian somehow, sampling the being's DNA. An interesting fact is that Cull Obsidian's homeworld and species are listed as unknown, referencing the mystery of Thanos' children in the MCU. Well, I mean, Thanos did kill off like all the planets, basically, or half of the planet every time he took it over.
Okay.
So if Tony snapped all of Thanos' people out of existence, why didn't the arm snap out too?
Exactly.
I was like, hold on, rewind. I was just thinking about this.
Yep.
All right, somebody's going to have to fill that part in.
Yeah, that's a gaping plot hole there.
Yeah, I would just assume everything associated with them would have flipped out.
Right. So there's got to be a Skrull in S.H.I.E.L.D. that has got access to all their hidden secrets.
Interesting. Finally, the last DNA sample was shown to be an extremist human. Iron Man 3 introduced these beings, with the Skrulls gaining access to some of their DNA. Piper.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't she still technically one, but was just like under control somehow? Because he was going to fix her.
Right.
But Pepper, not Piper. Wrong vowel in there. But I mean, she was the only one that was technically left alive. The rest of them like exploded, quite literally.
Yes.
But it's clear that the Skrulls are sampling abilities from superpowered species across the galaxy as a means of improving the Skrulls themselves, or Gravik. I thought it was just going to be him. Who knows?
Right.
But this is weird, so we don't know what's happening. I guess we will find out? Question mark.
Yeah.
The shock ending of episode 2 reveals that Nick Fury is married to a Skrull. Like some other inclusions on the list, the story detail in and of itself is not an MCU Easter egg. However, the character Fury is married to the same Skrull who helped him recruit Skrull spies in 97, referencing the fact that he may have been married in every single one of the appearances since Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I mean, he does mention, oh, my wife was mad at me.
Yep.
This is an Easter egg as it can allow Fury to be seen in an entirely different light throughout his entire journey, and it's huge reveal. Huge.
Yeah.
But then big question, was she on Earth the entire time that he was up in the spaceship?
Right.
Because again, I have questions about that. That seems odd.
Yes, it does. But I still don't know what to think of this.
I know. It's like you want to say something, right? Because you feel like you have an idea, but then you think it through and you're like, that doesn't make sense. I
right.
say that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So many questions. So many.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com. Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcasts. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there are plenty of other Marvel podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and we do hope you're enjoying our podcast. And don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts.
You can go over to www.fangirlzone.com. Check out all the ways you can get a hold of us on our contacts page, because there are many, many ways. And You can also check out the many, many podcasts over there on our podcast page. So for this episode of the Marvelous Post-Blip Podcast,
I'm Hulk Steve. We've been at war with each other since we could walk upright.
And I'm Sean Fangirl Acid. Until next time.